This episode is sponsored by Claude, the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. This is Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast, one quarter black yet no awards. In light of the upcoming Oscars and the just passed Black History Month, we're talking about Oscar. We're talking about Oscar-relevant black films and those that should have been in that category.
Oh my gosh.
This is Mark Lintonmeyer, and my ears are burning from hearing so many cinematic racial slurs over the past few days.
Wow. This is Al Baker, and I've got that Friday feeling.
I'm Sarah Lynn Breck, and I'm also the Michelle Pfeiffer of Pretty Much Pop's Dangerous Minds.
This is Lawrence Ware, and I'm still recovering from Mark's legitimately hilarious intro.
Yeah, this was your idea, Lawrence. Pitch it.
I am the only black person on the podcast. I don't know if people know, they can't see us. I think that Black History Month is really important. I think it's something that we should always celebrate anytime we give a chance. Anything that I'm involved with, I'm going to do something having to do with Black History Month. And since the Oscars are right around the corner, I believe they're like 2-3 weeks away from when we are recording this, I think it's a good time to talk about the fact that black films, question mark, we'll talk about what films are actually black. I have a whole criteria for that, and how they oftentimes are not recognized. And this will be very apropos because Sinners is up for a record number 16 awards. And I think that it's probably going to be shut out in all the major ones, but we'll talk about that when we get there.
Yeah, of course, we had our Sinners episode already, so, I mean, we can consider that in light of the rest of these. But, you know, the things that were on our list to potentially watch or rewatch or whatever were Moonlight, right, 2016 Best Pictures, 12 Years a Slave, 2013 Best Picture, Judas and the Black Messiah, nominated 2020 Best Picture. Spike Lee, I'm sure we'll do an actual Spike Lee episode at some point. I didn't actually watch any Spike Lee for this time, but Black Klansman is a recent one up there that he actually...
You didn't rewatch Malcolm X? That's the biggest snub
of all time.
I
didn't have time. I did, at your request, watch Boys in the Hood, which was nominated and you thought was one that should have won. And if it wasn't for this Oscar so white thing, I highly disagree, but we'll get into that.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
It just doesn't age that well. But then there's also things that you were talking about as they have black subject matter, but they're made by white people. They're critically lauded, but they are almost invariably problematic in some way from the black point of view, right? The Blind Side, Green Book, The Color Purple being maybe a more respectable one that it's based on a book by a black person, but it was still a Spielberg movie. I didn't rewatch that one. I don't have a really much memory of it at all. Yeah. And then there were just other things, you know, we didn't really go into TV, but at least I thought about, like, should we watch Roots? Like, that's relevant here.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did people do for this?
I revisited a couple of things, but mostly I just went back over the movies that appeared on the various lists that I found of like great Oscar snubs and Oscar moments in black history. And I was mainly interested in the idea of what makes a black picture in the sense that we're interested in. Like when we talk about Oscars So White, so that was a very particular campaign in 2016. And it's become also more of a general kind of rallying cry behind the idea that the Oscars is a racist institution in the way that institutions are institutionally racist. Clearly is. But I got super interested in the idea of what counted as like a black picture for the purposes of, and what counted as black work of the kind that ought to be recognized more by the Oscars. And also super interested in just what black filmmakers I'd hoping to get out of Oscars recognition, because the more I thought about the Oscars and the history of racial recognition and diversity and the way that it handles diversity and rewarding diversity and recognizing diversity and racial justice and social justice more broadly, the more it seemed to me that recognition at the Oscars is not worth the trouble for black creators. My big kind of provocative statement is that I think that the black creators who have got recognition at the Oscars have had to do so by compromising on their work, and that the great black filmmakers who have been snubbed, Spike Lee most notably, are the ones who made their work, and it remained uncompromising, it remained illegible, I guess, to the Academy. Spike Lee's work is generally too confrontational to be comfortably grasped by the Academy, and that seems to be the reason why it loses out, where pictures like 12 Years a Slave and Green Book and those others. 12 Years a Slave is the most interesting example because that is a properly black movie But I was remembering the discourse around that at the time, and I remember feeling like the point, something that makes me uncomfortable about 12 Years a Slave is that it's a black movie, but it is directed towards a white audience. It's a black movie that exists to educate white people about the history of slavery. And that has now become the kind of default mode for the recognition of black talent at the Oscars. And I remain deeply uncomfortable with the idea that the way for black talent to be recognized by the Oscars is to direct their filmmaking towards a white audience. That seems to me something that maybe isn't worth striving for. So that's my kind of provocative thesis statement.
That is provocative. We'll get into that. That's provocative. Sarah, what you got?
I was also interested in what makes a black film, and it was actually really fun to do that deep dive and be able to search based on who are the writers, who are the directors, who are all of the above the line talent. And then also below the line, I also noticed that many of the films that had a strong black presence above the line also hired costumers and makeup artists and people like that who are also black and extending those hands to black talent. And I too was thinking about, okay, so all of those movies that are considered black movies made by black creators, what are the stories that get rewarded? And I too, Al, was thinking about, oh, it seems like so many of these stories share some of the same subject matter. Many of them are about black trauma, or they're historical, and sometimes they include black trauma in the history. Many of them are about genre movies. You know, we've got horror movies being recognized. And I was just sort of thinking, is this only a black film problem, or is this all minorities and movies that are about women too? I mean, it seems like we sort of cover a lot of the same territory when it's not about straight white guys, basically.
Okay, this is about to be a Lawrence Harvey episode. Okay, so let's start off with the second thing you said, Sarah, and then I'm going to back up to the first thing that you guys both said. So the second thing, I think that when you're talking about black films, and the fact that you see a lot of black trauma, being a black person in America is just inherently full of trauma. It just is, you know, from killing black folks on the street and Black Lives Matter to slavery to the civil rights movement, like legitimately every decade you're dealing with some kind of black trauma. And so that is part of the reason why you see so much black trauma coming up. It's the same thing when you look at, as you said, you know, female directors and writers, like there's going to be some kind of black trauma. But there are films that do try to elevate that trauma into being something else. So I think like Friday is an example. It's a very funny movie. I don't think it's an Oscar-worthy movie, but it's a very funny movie. It is centered in black trauma, but nevertheless, it's extremely funny. Same thing with a whole bunch of different movies. The Best Man, whatever. You know, there are a lot of films that are not necessarily about black trauma. It may be in the periphery, but they're not necessarily about black trauma, but, you know, they can elevate themselves. Now, the big question here is what qualifies as a black movie? Because there are a number of movies, Driving Miss Daisy, The Blind Side, Green Book, Crash, a number of movies that feature black talent on screen that seemingly are about race in some way. They do win Oscars, but I do not qualify those as black movies. Because for me, for a movie to be black, and I got into a lot of trouble about this a year ago. I wrote this very provocative article that got me really blown up. And I got maybe thousands of emails about this. But nevertheless, you know, for me, for a film to be a black film, it needs to have black talent, not on the screen, but behind the screen. So for example, Bad Boys, Bad Boys 2, those could be considered to be black films, but they're not. Because you have white writers, white directors, white producers. They just have black talent on screen. And yes, that black talent had something to say about what they said and did, but the driving creative force behind those films were white people. And so that's the reason why I say Crash, for example, the Paul Haggis movie that is notorious in its Oscar win over Brokeback Mountain. Brokeback Mountain should have won that year. Or Green Book, or whatever. These are not black films. You know, The Blind Side. Those are not black films. Those are white directors, white writers, white producers. And the black people on screen are simply doing what they're told to do. They have no kind of creative say. And so those are the ones that I would not qualify. Now, the ones that Al said, the Spike Lee films, Mark just shat on, S-H-A-T, shat. He just shat on Boys in the Hood, but that's a black film, black director, black writer, black everything on that film. You know, Menace to Society, that's a black film. So there are a lot of black films, but the question here is, why do those films seem to not get as much recognition? The last black film, genuinely black film, I think Al already hit on this, was 12 Years a Slave, but that was a black film that was directed towards white people. And to be sure, I show that film in my class, you know, my Malcolm X and MLK class, when we kind of lay the groundwork and talk about race and racism in America. I use it as the background for where we're going. So I do think it has some kind of pedagogical worthiness, but it is essentially for white people, because black people know that story. So that's where I'll start off, that there are films that are about black people, but I would not say that every film about black person would qualify to me as a quote unquote black film.
A quick, I don't want to say rebuttal. It matters about the talent. Bong Joon-ho, right, Korean, made Mickey 17, which I had forgotten it, you know, while I was watching Mickey 17. Then I got to the end and like, oh, okay, I see that. But, you know, it didn't matter. Not that we were considering, right, his ethnic origins. If you're writing about injustice, if you can imagine situations, of course, that's it's a sci-fi, it's a speculative thing. Maybe we're talking about a completely different sort of, but it matters what sort of endeavor you're engaged in, right? If you're trying to show, so Amistad is another one, which is another Steven Spielberg film. I showed that in philosophy class. I think that is just as effective and gripping as 12.
Oh my gosh, I disagree with you.
As 12 Years a Slave.
I disagree with you so much.
Right? The reason that it doesn't work often for non-black folks to tell black stories is because they don't get it. They haven't experienced
it. They don't
understand. They're not on the inside. So you think that the writers,
is it because it's not commercial?
What do you mean?
I don't understand what you're saying.
That it's not for a wide audience?
Here's the thing. So let's juxtapose Amistad and 12 Years a Slave. So Amistad, yes, it tells a slavery story, but who are the main characters in that film? Right? Who are the driving people in that film? Who are the heroes in that film? Those are white people. You know, that is that's Matthew McConaughey. That is who was that played John Adams? I forgot who it was. Hopkins, I think. Anyway, but you know, yes, there is one standout black character, but you don't really, really enter into the black experience in that film in a substantial way. You visit it, but you don't enter it, right? You get a little bit of this and that of what the black experience is, but you don't really enter it. With 12 Years a Slave, that story is told completely from the black perspective, right? The white people, yes, they come and go. You have Matthew Fassbender. You have Benedict Cumberbatch, right? Yes, these people come and go.
You get to see a lot of your favorite white actors being super racist.
Yeah, it's the best part about a lot of these movies.
I always feel uncomfortable when I see white people say the N-word. I just do. I get it, but I still feel uncomfortable. But that is told completely from within the black perspective. Right? So much so that when 12 Years a Slave, when a character is getting lynched, you linger on that so you can get the idea of what a black person would feel, right? A white person doesn't want to see that. You cut away from that scene. With this, you linger there. Whenever Lupita Nyong'o is whipped, you linger there because you're getting from inside of the black perspective, not from, you know, the white perspective. It doesn't cut away. And so, yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. Yes, Amistad is okay. It's okay. Because it's a lot of talent there. You know, Steven Spielberg, he knows how to make a movie. It's a lot of talent there. But it is not at all a black film. Like, it is not told from within the black experience. It's not told from within the experience of people who are slaves. You visit that experience, but you don't linger there in that experience.
I feel like I should just represent the Wes Alwyn point of view if you were on this, which is just that he had argued before, if we have an episode on PEL about Russian literature, is it better to get a person from Russia or is it better to get an expert in Russian literature who is not Russian? Clearly the latter is actually going to know more about it. And so at least as a theoretical point, you know, somebody, I don't think that people living today who were not slaves, I think it's a matter of how much research you do, how much empathy you have, how good a creator you are. I don't think, you know, certainly you're going to be probably more interested in the topic if you are a black person suffering today's black trauma and interested, therefore, in going into black studies and, you know, becoming a scholar of this kind of stuff like you have. But there's nothing just about the human experience of being in a certain group that makes you automatically more empathetic and more able to authentically create this kind of stuff.
Good old Wes. What's up, Wes? How you doing, Wes? Man, how you doing? Well, I hope you're doing well, Wes.
I think there is, in a limited but extremely important way, absolutely, if the question is, who knows more about slavery, say, your average black guy or a white professor of American history, say, not even necessarily black history, but like your average white professor of American history is probably going to know more about slavery. That's fine. That hypothetical holds. But when it comes to people who are making movies, is your average black director going to be more literate about black American history or your average white director? So yes, you could do a bunch of research and try and make up the gap. But if you're thinking about who is your better bet to make a good movie about this period, like, it's like expecting someone who had never heard like Beatles music before they decided to make a movie about the Beatles, and then putting them next to someone who had grown up a Beatles fan their whole life. Like, who's going to be the better person to make that movie? There's just plenty of reasons to think that even though you could probably find a white person who knows more about an average black person about slavery, that doesn't mean that you would expect a white director to be the best pick to make a movie about it.
Lin-Manuel Miranda, right? If you say, oh, he's not ethnically qualified to make Hamilton, like, that's just obviously ridiculous. So the same should go in reverse, even though in the movies we're talking about. Anyway, I feel like I've made the point. I'm not going
to
harp on it.
You've been talking to Wes a lot, Mark. Holy crap. Go ahead.
This is super important because, like, in what
sense? I agree.
That line of argument only makes sense if you consider Hamilton a white story. Like, the story of Alexander Hamilton and the American Revolution is not a white story. It's like, if you take it as what it's supposed to be, it's an American story, not a white story. Also, Alexander Hamilton was Puerto Rican. That's part of the whole point. So what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm going to say this real fast. Sarah, I'm going to let you talk. But using that same argument, Mark, why not? Yes, you could get a white person who's a scholar, but there's a lot of black folks who are scholars too. So why not, you know, try to get someone who is a part of that community who is also knowledgeable, not some random off the street. In the same way that I wouldn't expect some random white person off the street to know, you know, the details of, you know, chattel slavery in America, I wouldn't expect a random black person off the street to know the details of chattel slavery. However, I would expect someone who is a scholar of that to know the details of it, white or black. But if I'm choosing, why not just choose a black person to bring on?
That's time for our first round of ads. And I do want to remind you that you could have a completely ad-free experience with even the smallest monthly donation at patreon.com/prettymuchpop. Plus, you'd hear our after talks for every episode, which are often quite lengthy. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. You have something to offer the world, and you should do it through your own website. Maybe you have a website, but you found it's annoying to keep having to update the plugins, whatnot. Maybe you find that your website is not coming up very high in Google search rankings. Maybe you want to start, say, selling things on your website or have an email newsletter, but you'd have to figure out another plugin. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform designed to help you stand out and succeed online. It makes setting up a new site very simple and makes doing a redesign very simple. They've got award-winning built-in templates. Or try Blueprint AI, Squarespace's AI-enhanced website builder, to get a fully custom website in just a few steps. You want a store, you want an email campaign, you want SEO optimization so your website is findable on the web by the people you want to see it. Of course, Squarespace has all that stuff. And Squarespace Domains makes it easy to find the best name for your business at one fair, all-inclusive price, no hidden fees or add-ons required. And every Squarespace domain comes with advanced privacy and security tools included to ensure your domain remains online and protected. Learn more at squarespace.com/pretty for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code PRETTY to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Let's talk about Claude AI. I've been using this for podcast-related research. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's a collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that mattered. I wish I'd had Claude when I was in school for, say, doing my bibliography, making sure all the citations have the right form. It was also frustrating when I was in school to not get feedback on my papers until after it was too late. After they'd been turned in, they'd already had their grade assigned. I would sometimes bother professors by submitting papers again and again and again. Well, Claude is not going to be yet as smart as your philosophy professor, but it's going to be able to pick out where your writing needs improvement, even suggest additional things that you might want to read to inform your argument. So Claude is going to give you some research capabilities way deeper than basic web search. And let's say you want to share this information. Claude can generate shareable, remixable websites you can access anywhere or send to others. It can instantly create diagrams you can adjust, even games you can play. Claude is not just a conversation partner. It includes AI agents that execute complex tasks autonomously with multi-step reasoning, and it can integrate with some of the tools you use, Excel, Google Workspace, several others. Go look at the list. Are you ready to tackle bigger problems? Get started with Claude today at claude.ai/PMP. That's claude.ai/PMP, and check out Claude Pro, which includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode, claude.ai/PMP.
This is definitely connected because we've had similar discussions about this in the literary world with bringing authors of color, authors of different abilities, and being able to tell these stories, because we're talking about stories from the perspective of a certain group. And that, I think, is when you have somebody who actually belongs to the group who has not had the same chances to tell these stories as white creators have, who have been telling these stories, some better than others, you take that opportunity. Of course you want to hear about, you don't want to watch Precious if it didn't come from a Black creator. That just feels so wrong to me. And these are stories that are what they're supposed to do is, in addition to entertain and learn and all of that, is build empathy. That's what art does. And you have to start with the source. So if you don't have Black creators creating Black stories for wide audiences, I don't think it's necessarily that, you know, 12 Years a Slave is a movie that may be for white people to educate white people, but it is coming at a particular point of view where we are forced to sit with this, much like we were forced to sit with deep trauma in Hamnet, right? It's an uncomfortable place to sit. And that is, I think, a good thing. I wish that we would have movies that were directed at all different types of audiences that were being recognized. But I don't think it's wrong that you have Black creators with Black talent creating movies that are about the Black experience that might make a lot of people wake up a little bit.
But the point where I think the more kind of Wes or Winnie point that I probably would agree on, which is an interesting counterpoint to this, is that the reverse, or kind of the inverse doesn't hold, which is that just because you have Black people on screen or Black people behind the camera doesn't mean that the story is necessarily going to be a good Black story. It can
no,
be
of course
like,
not. Of course
yeah.
Not, yeah,
right.
So
no.
I mean, that sounds very obvious when you say it, but the same mistake is kind of made in a lot of the discourse around Oscar nominations. So, for instance, the fact that Black women most often win for actor in a supporting role, right? These wins, when they happened, were touted as victories for Black representation in cinema. And it's not clear to me how they are, really. They weren't part of telling Black stories. It's clearly valuable, literally, to Black professional actors because it demonstrates that they can be bankable talent. But it doesn't seem to be the kind of justice victory that we should really be interested in. This seems to be a kind of sleight of hand that Hollywood seems to have gotten very good at, to me, which is presenting diversity as such as justice when they rarely are the same thing. So yes, you can hand out a few more supporting actor nominations or wins to some Black actors, but that doesn't mean that you're making more Black stories, and it doesn't mean that you're actually encouraging Black talent in a meaningful way.
Judging the quality of some of these Black films, especially when they're about important Black historical moments, runs into the same issues that judging any sort of important drama is. Like, how much are you paying attention to whether this is actually a well-shot, well-made film versus this is an important story for people to hear about? This is a serious thing, right? This is another just general critique of the Oscars that for a long time, they wouldn't recognize comedy. They wouldn't recognize genre films, things that are objectively just as hard to make. But, oh no, we're so serious people enjoying serious matters. And there's sort of a snobbery built into that. I think that the ones that we're considering sort of top of the list are not pretentious in this way. I think Moonlight, 12 Years a Slave, Judas and the Black Messiah. And then I haven't even mentioned Get Out. right? Because Get Out, like Sinners, is a genre film and is actually enjoyable to watch.
That should have been Best Picture.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I do not, in general, as we established with The Hemnet, put myself through these grueling dramas. I just don't generally find it that rewarding an experience for the most part. But something like Moonlight, I think, like Hemnet, is one that, okay, invest in it and you will be rewarded because it's such just a beautiful film. And, you know, I was describing the plot to my wife and she's like, this sounds horrible. This sounds like so sad. And so, but it has such an uplifting ending that, you know, it actually makes it. So, yeah, I feel like I'm actually having an enjoyable experience, enjoyable in the rich and full literary sense, not, you know, having your pleasure button pushed, not being manipulated into something.
American Fiction is one film I found.
It's really good.
It's great, but it's also hilarious. And it does poke fun at some of these. I mean, clearly the whole premise is about poking fun at the way that, at the Black stories that Black creators are quote unquote allowed to tell. Mm. But it does it in a really funny, engaging, commercial way. And that movie was absolutely nominated for a shit ton of awards. And it was Black creators from the director to the book that it was based on to much of the on-screen talent. I mean, it was, that seems like a little bit of an anomaly.
Wasn't that Shut Out though? Like, did it win anything? I think maybe it won screenplay, if anything.
At the Oscars specifically.
It was, but it was still nominated for a bunch of stuff.
I mean, so here's the thing. There's been a lot of stuff that's been nominated. The nominations is not the issue. I mean, the nomination kind of is the issue. But the nomination is not the only issue. The thing is, like, what actually wins, though? Like, because there's a lot of stuff that's been nominated. You know, Boys in the Hood that Mark hates was nominated for stuff. You know, Judas and the Black Messiah was nominated for a lot of things. You know, there's been a lot of movies. Spike Lee's been nominated over and over and over again. Maybe just twice. But anyway, he's been nominated for many times. He just never wins. The question then becomes, why does this matter? Like, why do we care? Mm. Why is this a thing, Oscar's so white? Like, why was that something that was significant? Now, the reason why is because there has been a gold standard in Hollywood history for recognition, for better or for worse. Now, yes, the NAACP has their awards that I vote on and I participate in. The Soul Train Awards, I used to have their awards. I don't think that happens anymore, but I used to vote on that. BET has their awards. I vote on that, right? But those awards are not as prestigious as the Oscars, right? The Oscars are just on a completely different plane. Golden Globes, once upon a time, got close, but they're just on a completely different level. And the Golden Globes have a history of not recognizing Black talent as well, but we'll get, that's not the point. But there is a gold standard in the history of movies, and that gold standard is the Academy Awards, the Oscars. That's the gold standard. And so since this is the gold standard, right, this gold standard needs to represent the people that are out there in the world. And for many years, up until Oscar So White, it was 80% on a good year, most of the time 90% white men, right? That is what it was. And so things have changed. The Oscar body
voting.
Is
that
more...
Right? Is that what you're saying, Lawrence?
Yeah, the voters, yeah. So things have changed. The voting body has changed. It's gotten more international. It's gotten more diverse. But the reality is that we have to wait for the people who voted for Driving Miss Daisy to die before we really see the real change come in, right? Because those people are still there. They're still part of the body. It's gotten bigger, and they're still the vast majority of the people who are voting. And so the reason why this matters and the reason why we care is because we want to be recognized on the highest standard as well. We don't want to be ghettoized to these awards that essentially no one really kind of remembers. You know, no one writes on the box when they're promoting a movie. They don't do boxes anymore because they don't do DVDs and VHSs. But whatever, no one writes on the box, you know, the NAACP award-winning movie. No, but they will write Oscars. They might write Golden Globe-winning film, but that's about it. And so it's about recognition. It's about seeing ourselves as a legitimate part of the storytelling community, and that just has not been recognized yet. It's getting there, but it's not where it needs to be. And to Mark's point, I'm going to be honest, I don't like that serious, heavy, over-the-top trauma stuff either. That's the reason why I'm so happy that Sinners is there. I mean, Sinners is kind of trauma, but it's fun. You know, it's a fun movie.
It's very fun.
It's a genre movie, you know? And so I would like for the breadth of, you know, black filmmaking to be recognized, not just the stuff that's just like only about black trauma and Selma and 12 Years a Slave and Judas and the Black Messiah and Malcolm X, like that heavy, heavy stuff. I think that in the same way that light white films can be recognized, light black films that are well made and have good cinematography and well acted and well written can be recognized as well. It doesn't have to be that heavy stuff at all.
Mm. That's one of the key things. So you say recognition, right? And recognition is clearly the key thing. Mm-hmm. The problem is the Oscars is an institution from old Hollywood, as you very rightly said.
You're right.
Is a lifetime membership thing then, right?
Yeah.
Right. And even after the recent shakeup and expansion, you're still looking at a, what, 70%?
Yeah, it's 70 this year. Yeah, it's still really high.
But you made an interesting point, which is that this has to, like, they have to represent the people out there. And that's, I think, really where seeing the Oscars as a vehicle for social justice just falls flat. And I don't think it's ever going to be able to work. And I absolutely understand the need for recognition, but this is a corrupt vehicle for recognition.
Mm.
So we mentioned genre films and things like this. It's not an accident that the majority of black cinema, black art, falls under what would be labeled like genre movies.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about seriousness in cinema, we mean a notion of good cinema that was formed by overwhelmingly white auteur creators in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So in a very real sense, this is where I get kind of uncomfortable, because in a very real sense, the quest for acceptability is a quest for like palatability to a white standard of cinema. And that doesn't matter whatever minority or underrepresented like group you're coming from. In order to succeed institutionally in an unjust institution, you're basically gonna have to sell out a bit. It's gonna corrupt you slightly. Interestingly, this is one of the themes of Sinners, right? So it would be beyond ironic if this movie wins big at the Oscars. And I don't really know what to do about it. I just really, really wish that Jordan Peele could feel free to make a movie that wasn't principally about black trauma, and that it would be rewarded in the same way that his other movies would be. I don't know if he would want to make a movie that wasn't about black trauma, but I feel like he's not economically incentivized to do anything other than be a spokesperson for his ethnicity, and that really sucks.
I mean, that's a very specific critique of that. I know we had a Get Out / the Nope episode. I don't know if you were on that, Al. I know Lawrence was on that. I'm sure we'll return to him. Yeah, I don't care so much about the Oscar. You know, I get your argument, Lawrence, about recognition in the wider public sphere and this being, but I think people should, you know, they put, especially if it's an important black movie about a historical event, like put NAACP award winner, like that would be legitimate. If you're going in to watch the Jesse Jackson biopic or whatever.
This is the problem. No one does care. People do care about the Oscars.
No one cares. Like people care about the Oscars. Like the Oscars are what people are gunning for. That's the gold standard. For white and black filmmakers, for Asian filmmakers, for Jewish filmmakers, that's the gold standard. And so I hear you. I wish that I've argued this. I've argued that we should put the NAACP and respect it more. We should. But we don't. And since we don't, we have to, I mean, the Grammys, that's the gold standard. You know, the Oscars, that's the gold standard. You know, the Pulitzer Prize, the Penn Award, those are the gold standards. And that's just the way it is. And so you're talking about a major change in the way people view these things. And I would be inclined to agree with you. I just know that it's not going to happen.
Do you think it's just a matter of time? I'm just looking at right now, like the current list of nominees for Best Picture. And one of them obviously is Marty Supreme. And I was thinking about this topic versus films made by Jewish creators and how the types of stories that Jewish creators that were rewarded for were often based in trauma as well. And then we all got pretty sick of the World War II narratives, or just oversaturated with World War II narratives. And we've been able to kind of move on. And I wonder if we're going to see a saturation point for black creator art as well.
I mean, that's a great question. I think we've moved away from slavery. So it seems like slavery's in the rearview mirror. We've kind of moved away from the 60s and civil rights movies stuff. Like, Judas and the Black Messiah is post that. We did Selma and we're kind of past that. Mm-hmm. And now we're doing the juke joints and we're doing the black, you know, so I think that we were kind of moving in that direction. But you're absolutely right. We did that Schindler's List stuff. You know, we did the boy in the striped pajamas things. You know, we did those things. And then the Jewish creators kind of changed and they made different kinds of films. That's a whole conversation, though. The Marty Supreme thing and what's going on with them. But you're right.
I mean, that's kinda, a very Jewish film, but it is. It's still
it's very chill. But it's not contemporary. But you know, it's very fresh. It's new. It's different. It retains its Jewishness, but it's not tied to like Jewish trauma.
And it's considered an American, story. Film. And I was like, what? I want more of that. I want an American story from a black perspective that's not necessarily based in trauma.
You go to the Holocaust stories; those aren't American stories. Black filmmakers have been making American stories, like Boys in the Hood, that's an American story. Menace to Society, that's American. Judas and the Black Messiah, that's American.
That's true.
Even 12 Years a Slave, that's American. Like, we've been making American stories. It's just that the American stories that we are making are from our perspective, which might have a little bit of a trauma to them because that's the experience of black people in America. I don't think many people see them as American stories. They see them as black American stories. In the same way that Black History Month is ghettoized and we teach black history in February, but we don't teach us like, well, we're starting to teach it. But we once upon a time didn't really teach us like the American story. It's starting to change.
I agree. I think I didn't word that very well. They are American stories, but we don't necessarily as a whole, as a country, embrace them and look at them as our stories. No, these are our stories. They're shared. I was looking back at Eddie Murphy's career. And do you remember Boomerang when that came out?
Of course I remember Boomerang. Of course I remember. One of my favorite movies. Yeah, of course.
I know. Me too. Me too. I love that movie. And I loved that one of the things I remember at the time when it came out.
He broke up
with
her because she had jacked up feet. That was so jacked up. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go for it.
That's right. That's right. Her feet were so jacked up. I think that came from his real life too. I think Eddie Murphy has a foot thing. But anyway, he was talking about how he wanted to create kind of this world where race and wealth and all of that kind of stuff, there was no complicated relationship. He created this world where that was made out of beautiful, wealthy, smart black people. And it was a comedy. And it was just, it was so funny. And he deliberately did not want to bring in any baggage that for him, that he didn't want to bring any of that in. And anyway, I just thought it was just so funny. It was like, it was this movie that was basically in a world that doesn't really exist, but he created this world and it was delightful.
I mean, it kind of does exist. And that's the thing. So like when that movie came out, people were like, this is a fantasy world. They had no idea that there is an entire history of wealthy black people doing these kinds of things. Like, that is a little bit fantasized, but, you know, that is possible. And he also had, you know, the Chitlins. And so you had the country, you know, folks who, you know, come from middle class, lower middle class background who are, like, brought into that story. But, like, that's the thing. Like, why can't we just have those kinds of films just be recognized?
Yeah.
Because that is a film that, I mean, it's kind of dated. That's a film, if made now by a Ryan Coogler, would be very well made, would be well directed, all that kind of stuff. And I remember when, you know, so the Devil Wears Prada Part 2 is going to come out here soon. When that first Devil Wears Prada came out, that was an Oscar film. If you remember, that was an Oscar film. Those people were nominated for things. And of course, Meryl Streep was in there, so of course she was nominated. But other people were nominated for things. Why can't black people make films like that and be nominated? Because that is what I would like to see. That's where I would like for us to get to.
That's the point. I was also thinking about Eddie Murphy and specifically Dolomite Is My Name. If you just hear the story about like the story of the making of this movie, this is a huge name turning in a career best performance in a passion project that's about like fringe cinema, fringe cinema in the 70s. And on paper, that sounds like an Oscar contender. But because it's about cinema which succeeded like outside of the Academy structure, right? It's about fringe cinema. It's about something that goes outside of these power structures. And it's because it's not like po-faced and serious, because it doesn't, I would argue, because it doesn't center racial justice as a movie. It's about like, it's present there. Mm-hmm. That trauma is present there, but it's not the center of the movie.
Right.
The movie's about the joy of making movies, but it's a black story just mainly about the joy of making movies and not mainly about racial trauma. And I think that's why it never stood a chance, even though if it was you know, a similar white story would have been a contender. Is the artist, is the similar white story.
And The Artist, man, that's a historic travesty. I still can't believe that movie won Best Picture and that actor won Best Picture. Because there were, I'm sorry. Don't let me get going on that. God, I hate that movie.
Can I just distract by, you just used the term po-faced. And I've always wondered, is that a racist term? Because it sounds... Oh, you're so po. But I just looked it up, and it's probably derived from 20th century British slang for person looking as if they were staring at a chamber pot. Po for pot to chamber with disgust. Who knew?
Never knew. I mean, I'll tell you, I wasn't offended by Po Face, and I'm probably going to start using that. Another film that Eddie Murphy should have won for. Honestly, this one is the one he really should have won for was Dreamgirls.
Dreamgirls, yeah.
He was so good in that. Mm. And that movie is not about black. I mean, he's got a little bit of trauma there, but it's not about black trauma. It's about black success. It's about the trials and tribulations of working in the industry. That was such a good performance, and he didn't win. You know, it's like if you don't make a film that's like serious and downbeat and all that kind of shit, then you don't get recognition as a black filmmaker or a black artist. And that's got to change. That's got to change.
One writer that I was kind of focusing on was August Wilson, who I think does a...
I love August Wilson.
I love him too.
Love him so much.
I miss him. He died way too young. But anyway, I was interested in the way that he kind of melds some of the generational trauma, but it's not necessarily centered on that. And he creates these really full, beautiful characters that are multitudes. So yes, of course, we're going to be influenced by our past, but we're also focusing on the relationships, the family relationships that he builds so well. And I also want to see more of that. I want to see more of that brought to the screen.
Yeah, I agree.
I wish when I made this list that people had reminded me of Fences based on the August Wilson thing, because I still have not seen that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got to watch that.
Precious, really I good. Have never yet seen.
I don't love Precious. Let me say this real fast. That's a movie that is way too traumatic for me. I get that Monique won an Oscar for her performance, and she was actually blacklisted after that. But man, that movie was way too like I watched it one time in the movie theater, and I stumbled out that movie theater like, days. Like, that was too much for me. Mark, don't watch that. Don't watch them. I mean, okay. You'll see good performances, but God damn, that movie is hard to watch.
So what I thought it was about was this, you were going through sort of a list of historical things and like, have we had enough movies about slavery yet? Have we had enough movies about the 60s civil rights yet? As long as we have this cultural situation, we're going to have films about the ghetto, or what is there a better way to refer to that now? Is the ghetto of an offensive
or about poverty?
The hood about poverty.
Just don't say the ghetto. Like, don't say that. But you're fine.
Just try not to be you while you're saying
the Elvis song. The Elvis song comes to my mind whenever I think of that. That you know.
Oh my goodness!
If there's anything,
the Eric Cartman version. In the ghetto.
I mean, yes. I can't believe you said it like the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
But so that's what you're talking about with Boys in the Hood. And I feel like, and so sort of a related issue is, has the rise of prestige TV affected how we judge movies? Because Boys in the Hood, all I could think of, is I've urged you several times to watch The Chi, the Showtime.
Yes, you have. God, I just don't want to watch. There's so many seasons. I don't know what I want to watch.
But I mean, it's basically Boys in the Hood.
Is it
made
really?
Okay. Into, I mean, it's obviously, it's not the same characters, but it's the same kinds of situations, but informed by The Wire.
Mm.
So it has some sort of police angle on it as well. But then it also, as anything that becomes a series, has a certain soapy element to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that might turn you off in terms of, you know, I don't need to go the ongoing. But that's kind of the ongoing drama of these characters. Even Boys in the Hood, like, that is what that is. It's just when I actually saw, so Boys in the Hood is from 1991, and the music really struck me as so dated. And when I'm just looking at these individual scenes, I'm like, I looking at, if I just by comparing it to like the average episode of ER, like when they're not actually in the operating room and doing but like the dramatic parts of that, like this is not any better than that. And it's certainly not any better than The Chi, which has a lot of time to really explore these kind of conflicts and the should I join the gang or not? How am I going to support my baby that I had at age 17? You know, these family dynamic situations. you know, I think there's a lot to that. And maybe Boys into Hood was really innovative for what it was doing at the time.
It was the first. Yeah. It was the first. I mean, yeah.
I felt like some of the dramatic scenes were just overwrought. And it just, the whole thing felt kind of like an after school special to me, honestly. Like, so
I mean, it's very dated. And I would not have said that film should have won for Best Director, because I think that John Singleton is a fine director. I don't think he's a great director. And that was his first film, and he didn't deserve it to win for that, because it is a little tough at times. But the story that it's telling is so innovative, is so unique. It definitely should have won for Best Original Screenplay. That's where I would have said it should have won. Not for the acting, not for the direction. The score has dated, but it was really good at the time. You know, that, what you're looking at there, that's like watching Birth of a Nation and saying, oh, you know, I've seen that before in Rashomon or something like that. It's just the first one. And so it's very innovative. That's the first one that really kind of, him and Spike Lee, because they're kind of around the same time. Because Do the Right Thing, I want to say, is 89. So it's just that those are the first ones that like took seriously the experience of young black people in the hood or the ghetto, and it kind of tells the story from their perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was just innovative. You know, it's the first one, and so I'll give it a little bit of a pass. For me, honestly, Menace to Society is the better one of the two. Those are oftentimes like put in conversation. Mm. Menace to Society is the better one, even though Menace to Society is so nihilistic and so dark that it is not at all like uplifting, because there is nobody who gets out of Menace to Society and goes like to Morehouse. That doesn't happen. It's very dark. Honestly, it's more realistic. But yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but it was the first one. It was the first one. So I would say for that one, probably screenplay.
And you know what? And I did a rewatch of Boys in the Hood, which I hadn't watched, I think, since it came out. And I was kind of struck by the characterizations were so stark. It's either you have this perfect father who reacts in the perfect possible way, who is so calm, I mean, and cool.
Furious like, isn't perfect. I mean, he is cheat. He like, it's a subtext that, you know, him and his wife broke up, you know.
Just about, but pretty close. And he, with the yeah. perfect son who listens to him, listens to his advice, and, you know, and then you have the woman who keeps asking for money for drugs or something. You know, it's like, it's either, there's nobody kind of in between. There's either this perfect characters, and then you have people who are just, you know, who are really, really scraping the bottom for lots of different reasons, but there's no one kind of in between in that. And there's just no kind of nuance to characterization in that movie. But I remember when it came out, that was a huge, huge movie. It was a big deal that it existed.
So Moonlight, I think, Sarah, addresses your issue that both the main characters in that are flawed. Well, the three main characters, right? So you have these people who are drug dealers, but they're good people and like take mm-hmm. in this boy. And then the boy himself becomes that eventually. His love interest, this other guy who is, I don't want to give the whole plot away, but you know, it has a tragically flawed, peer pressured situation, eventually becomes like a humane guy. He's a chef. He probably openly gay and not hiding it the way he was in high school, mm-hmm. but like went through some shit and is on parole,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's just these people that have come out of this horrible situation,
yeah,
but yet are decent people despite some terrible life choices.
Yeah. I do like seeing how stories that are centered in maybe highlight the poverty or something and how they've evolved over time. Moonlight is a beautiful, beautiful movie.
And it's very innovative because before that, there really weren't any like legitimately mainstream black stories that centered queer characters. Not really.
Yeah.
And so it's very important in that way that it does that. And
you're right.
The thing is, like, that's not that long ago. Like, that was, 2017, 2018?
2016.
Like, that's just, 9 years ago? It's just, we're so behind the curve on being able to make those kinds of films and be recognized. That's, like, the whole point, is that we should have been in the 90s able to make, certainly in the 2000s, able to make these films, but we had to wait until the 2016 to be recognized. And then there hasn't been another film like that that's been recognized. There's been a lot of other black films that have been inspired by it that are just as good, just as well directed, just as well acted, but we still don't get recognized for making just like good, you know, films. And those films are true to life. Like, I know Mahershala Ali won Best Supporting Actor for that film. And he plays a character that I knew growing up. I knew a guy who dealt drugs, but was a good guy and made sure that he saw that I was a smart kid. And he tried to make sure that I didn't, you know, fall into bad stuff. And he tried to give me a little bit of money to kind of help me out because I was raised by a single mother. Like, I knew guys like that. And so for him to kind of play that so well, it is absolutely Oscar worthy. But there has not been another kind of black character actor win an Oscar like that. And that's just a shame because it's a human story.
Daniel Kaluuya won for Judas and the Black Messiah, Best Supporting Actor, right?
He did, but yes. but he didn't play that kind of character. He played an important black character.
No, but yeah. So that's just another film that, right, so it's 2020 and it didn't win. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think, you know, of course there have been things that won. You know, I kind of wish I'd rewatched Shakespeare in Love when we just had this Hamnet conversation, because it seems like that is the kind of thing that, like, that shouldn't have won. You know, it was a nice picture, but like best picture. And I know I'm sort of sounding, in some ways it shouldn't have won because it was too frivolous, right? That I feel, even though I just criticized it, I do kind of agree. You know, this is self-analysis that, mm-hmm. Oh, it wasn't important enough, like 12 Years a Slave. But like when I compare Judas and the Black Messiah to The Departed, which are very similar kinds of story about an undercover person, mm-hmm. in a serious situation, even though The Departed, yeah. is, you know, mafia and that sort of cliche at this point, whereas Judas and the Black Messiah was exploring the Black Panthers, which is not something I've heard too much about already. Mm-hmm. And Daniel Kaluuya as the leader of the Black Panthers was so good. Like, he had that lingo down and that accent down really and that patter down. He was just incredibly well researched. But I still think the flow of the movie, like, it just did not grip me, mm-hmm. in the way that The Departed did.
I mean, The Departed is directed by Martin Scorsese.
Yes.
And this film is directed by, I don't even know if this guy's made another film, the guy who directed Judas and the Black Messiah. You know, so you're dealing with like a legendarily great filmmaker, and you're dealing with like a guy who's a serviceable filmmaker, right? And so to compare the two movies, I don't think is necessarily fair, because Judas and the Black Messiah is not a well-directed movie, not real. I mean,
Shaka King is the director. I don't know. I'm not familiar with his stuff.
I don't think he's made anything else.
So you don't think it was robbed?
No, that one was not robbed. No. Now, if Daniel Kaluuya hadn't won for that, he would have been robbed, because his performance was so much better than that film. Like, that film, even though I wrote about that film and I kind of liked it, but I wouldn't say it's a great film. But his performance, had he not been awarded for that performance, that would have been a rob. But as far as the movie itself for Best Picture and screenplay and whatnot, no, they weren't robbed. They weren't robbed. You know, I have no problem saying that this film is made by black filmmakers, but it's not a great film. Like, I have no problem with that. What I want are the really good films to be awarded. That's what I want. Shadas, you guys even know what Shadas is, but like Shadas to be awarded, nah, they don't need to be awarded. I'm fine with that. You know, The Best Man to be awarded, they don't need to be awarded. But the films that are made by black filmmakers that do achieve to those heights, those do need to be awarded.
What about something like King Richard, which is a black film, which
it is.
Did win for Best Actor.
Shockingly. After he slapped the hell out of Chris Rock, he won. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And he gave a pretty bonkers speech after that.
And then he got kicked out the Academy, can't come back for 10 years. But keep going.
I know. But that is a story that is about real people. You know, this one is about real people who still are around and black excellence, but also it's about race, and it brings in lots of other things and that are related to race in there. But it does seem like it's more focused on the lives of this family and their family dynamics. I don't know. I've been trying to scour films that are complicated, that aren't just a history lesson.
But Will Smith was so good. Like, so you do see, so for example, what's her name who's going to win Best Actress? She was in Hamnet. You guys know what I'm talking about. Jesse Buckley, is that her name?
Jesse Buckley, yeah.
Like, you do see every now and then, and the same thing's going to happen this year with Marty Supreme, I think. I would put money on those of you who are listening, put money on Timothée Chalamet to win this year because he's almost certainly going to win. But you do see certain performances that are just like otherworldly that jump off the screen and those be awarded and the film not be rewarded. King Richard is a fine film. I don't think that movie needed to be rewarded, though. I just don't think so. But Will Smith's performance did. Will Smith was so good in that movie that his performance did deserve to be rewarded. And so, yeah, I mean, that does happen every now and then. It didn't happen for black actors for a while, not until around the 2000s. And now you're starting to see Forrest Whitaker for Idi Amin. Like, that does happen a little bit more now. That's good, but we still haven't cracked the film yet. We still haven't cracked Best Picture. We've started to see a little bit more with actors, which is good, because I remember when What's Love Got to Do with Angela Bassett and Lawrence Fishburne didn't win, that was a shocking loss. I could not, that was a huge snub. And then Denzel Washington not winning for Malcolm X, a shocking loss. I couldn't believe that he didn't win. That's not happening as much as it used to. The last time that happened was probably Chadwick Boseman. But yeah, that doesn't happen as much as it used to, which is good, but we still haven't cracked that Best Picture. We've kind of gotten in there with production design, costume design. We've gotten better, but we have not yet cracked that Best Picture, Best Screenplay, really not yet. So we have some things to do. We'll get there.
So I will link folks to the seminal articles that Lawrence published in this area that he shared with us to enrage you.
They're not seminal. They're not seminal. They are well-written because I'm a good-ass writer, but they're
not seminal. NWACP Image Award winning blog posts by Lawrence.
I just wanted to recapitulate Lawrence's takeaway message there for the black creative community, which it seems to me to be, try harder, guys. You haven't won a scrutiny.
Al, that is not what I said. That is not what I said.
Try harder.
That's not what I said.
Stop writing such shitty screenplays, guys.
That is not what I said. That is not what I said.
Lawrence Ware, New York Times.
Yeah. And by the way, Mark, I don't do blogs, sir.
I know.
I write for a publication.
Specifically.
Put some respect on my name, sir.
I seethe with envy. All right, let's say bye to everybody. We'll do some after talk and maybe go into some of these movies for whoever can stick around. Go to patreon.com/prettymuchpop if you want to hear us jabber some more about this. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
And those of you who are black, stay black. Only those who are black.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.